The only daily Premier League podcast. This is Football Social Daily.
Hello and welcome to Wednesday's edition of the Football Social Daily. And as we approach that time of year where a Wednesday feels like a Saturday and a Tuesday feels like a Sunday, the Premier League is offering absolutely no help in dealing with our calendar confusion, because a full set of midweek games kicks us off nicely for December as the Premier League enters its final few weeks of 2021. And on today's show, we'll be looking back at last night's action in part one. Newcastle's winless run has stretched on to 14 Premier League games as they picked up a 1-1 draw at St James's Park against fellow strugglers Norwich, whilst under pressure Leeds grabbed themselves a massive win at home to Crystal Palace. That's all to come in part one of the podcast. In part two, the focus is on tonight's games. Leicester go to Southampton, league leaders Chelsea head to Watford, and record-chasing David Moyes hosts Brighton. And if that's not enough for you, in part three of the show, we have the final three games of Wednesday night. Rain or shine or even snow, there'll be no stopping Sean Dyche as Burnley head off to Wolves, Grealish goes back to Villa, and under fire Rafa Benitez faces his first Merseyside derby as Everton boss. Right then, a full spread to get ourselves through on Wednesday's show. As always, on a Wednesday, my name's Fergal Brennan, and as always on a Wednesday, we have Wednesday regular Ian Brannan. Ian, how's things?
Hello, yes, here celebrating all the joys of the midweek. Before we crack on, by the way, because I know we've got a lot to get through, but I think we should give a huge congratulations and an honorary mention to the England women's football team, who battered Latvia 20-0 last night in a World Cup qualifying match. Absolutely tremendous. Ellen White now the leading all-time scorer, 48 goals, many of which she scored last night, as well as Lauren Hemp, Beth Mead, Ella Toon, Georgia Stanway, Jess Carter, Jill Scott, Jordan Nobbs and substitute Alicia Russo all getting on the score sheet. 20-0, the magic of the cup.
The magic of the cup indeed. 20-0, it is absolutely wild. I did see that last night and just thought to myself, wow. Imagine fitting in the time to score 20 goals, but ridiculously impressive stuff from the England's women's national team. Alongside Ian, we also have Marley Anderson, the recently married Marley Anderson. Congratulations, Marley. How were the first few days of married life treating you?
Hey, they would have been better if Newcastle had won last night. That's what I asked for a wedding present. But needless to say, Kieran Clarke let me down, and I'll be spending the next 20 minutes absolutely hammering him. But as for married life, it's all good so far.
Very good. Well, I mean, if you know, kind of set out as one of the starters in married life that your attitude is going to be governed by Newcastle United's results until death does you part, I hope that your new bride has signed a prenup, because it's not going to go well. Right, moving on. Right, Newcastle, that's where we are going to start, Marley. Obviously, as you mentioned, two games last night in the Premier League, and neither of them massive amounts get the pulse rating from a neutral perspective. We're going to start with Newcastle. Newcastle 1, Norwich City 1. Not really a massive amount of chances at either end, really. Just some big decisions made by the referee that dominated on the night. Two big calls. Kieran Clarke sent off after 9 minutes for what is probably one of the most deliberate fouls I've ever seen in the Premier League. Pulls back Timo Pukki. Straight red and he's off, and Newcastle are down to 10 with 80 minutes to go. But then Billy Gilmore gives you a hand in the second half. Handball in the box, and Callum Wilson puts you 1-0 up. But couldn't hold on, and an absolute wonder goal from Timo Pukki got a point for Norwich. 14 games in the Premier League without a win. Obviously, the bulk of them are laid at the door of Steve Bruce. But Eddie Howe has swept in. There is a lot of freshness and newness, and people are really excited about what he's going to do. But in terms of points, very little has changed.
Yeah. In the black and white of things, little has changed on the points thing. But in terms of how we played and how we've been playing, it's much, much, much better. The only thing that could relegate us in 6 months' time or whatever it is, will be that we've run out of time and we've wasted those first 10 games in relatively winnable games, and we haven't won any of them. But last night I thought the performance was fantastic. Going down to 10, we still bossed that first half. We were still the better side that looked like scoring. Played very, very brave. Eddie Howe usually, because we set up 4-4-2, and when the centre-back got sent off, we had to take Ryan Fraser off, and instead of saying, OK, we'll go 4-4-1, we went 4-3-2. Joe Linton ended up playing central midfield, which he was by far the best player on the pitch. He was absolutely fantastic. Best game I've ever seen him play in a Newcastle shirt. He was absolutely everywhere, but you know, we just couldn't hang on the end. In the end, it was always going to be a case of do we run out of energy? Because obviously with 10 men, when you're not dominating the ball and you're trying to defend a 1-0 lead, you're just hoping something doesn't bounce for them and we're too tired to react to it. And that's exactly what happened. And Pukki scores and it's 1-1. And in the end, we take the point and move on. But, you know, time's running out. Our next five games are horrendous. We've got Burnley on Saturday or Sunday, whichever day it is, I think it's Saturday. Have to beat Burnley, and we have to hope now for a serious improvement January onwards.
Obviously, you look at that run of games to come that's on the horizon between now and Christmas. Burnley this weekend, you do get the sense that it's absolutely massive. Not to rub it in, but just to remind everyone that doesn't know, Leicester away, Liverpool away, Man City at home, United at home, and then to wrap up the year, Everton away. It's absolutely essential that you get something at Burnley this weekend. You're at home. You would expect the crowd to kind of just drive Newcastle on and drive them on, because even if you come out of this game with a point at the weekend, going into them between now and the end of the year, it's difficult to pick more than maybe a plucky draw here and there, which would put you in a big, big mess to start 2022.
Yeah, pretty much summed it up there. We need to beat Burnley at the weekend. You know, Leicester aren't in the best of positions right now. You can hope for a point at the King Power there, maybe. Then you got, you know, City, United and Liverpool. You're not going to get much there. United are still going to be on that bounce and that improvement and going to get better week after week. Liverpool and Man City, you might as well just write it off. Doesn't matter where you play them. You can play them on the moon and still not beat them. So then it comes into Everton at sort of just after Christmas, and you're thinking by that time they might have a new manager. They might have improved. They probably will have got Calvert-Lewin back. And it's all just a little bit negative. But I mean, the way we're playing is the hope, because there is much more cohesion with the team now. And there is January coming up. Maybe we can get a couple in January. I don't know what's going to happen, obviously. But in the grand scheme of things, we just need to try and fluke our way out of this now, because the first 10 games and the protracted takeover and everything that's been going on is not a recipe that is like you just wouldn't pick for that to happen to your club when you're trying to also compete in a season as well. You kind of want that to happen in the summer, but it hasn't worked out like that, and we've now just got to deal with it and the sort of games that come in the meantime of you trying to sort things out off the pitch as well.
Before we move on to Leeds, Ian, I just want to ask you about Norwich. Given the situation at Newcastle a month ago, before Daniel Farke was relieved of his position, Norwich and Newcastle were in an almost identical situation in terms of really struggling to get results. Obviously, Farke got their first win of the Premier League season in his final game in charge. But just looking at their results in the last couple of weeks, they've got more points in the last month than Newcastle have got all season. And that was a little bit to do with Farke, but generally speaking, it's to do with Dean Smith coming in. Form-wise, nobody outside the top six is in a better run of form than Norwich. It is easy to sneer at this new manager bounce and the fact that they're still going to have big problems to stay up. But everything they're doing, whilst it mightn't be the most exciting or headline-grabbing, everything they're doing is slowly and steadily moving them away from the drop zone.
Very slowly. I think, you know, they've not had the toughest
slowly,
fixtures
yeah.
either. But, you know, you always do get the new manager bounce. That is always something to take into account. That said, what I would say is Dean Smith has got some good experience in you know, making teams dig in and survive. You know that they're not going to roll over this year. If they do go down, they'll be there fighting for it. It's hard to say what's going to happen at the bottom. You know, there's so many teams that could easily get dragged into it. And you look at the league table as it is, you know, anybody in the bottom half, actually, as it stands at the moment, could end up easily getting dragged into that. Some very tricky fixtures coming up over the Christmas period, which is always key. There's always that stat that you don't want to be bottom at Christmas. So whoever that is, it could be any of those three down there at the minute. I think that Norwich have got that experience of being a bit of a yo-yo club. You know, they know what is coming and they probably, hopefully, have learnt from it and know that they need to dig a bit deeper and maybe changing the manager at the point in the season that they have rather than leaving it till after Christmas might be their best move, possibly. But I don't know. It's a nightmare down there. You don't want to get dragged into it, that's for sure. And you certainly don't want to end up in the Championship.
No. A nightmare at Christmas for probably about half a dozen teams, but they'll want to be avoiding, obviously, that situation. We're going to move on to Leeds. Ian, I mentioned in the notes that this was a bit of a snore fest at Elland Road, a massive result and a big 3 points for Leeds. But you told me off before we started recording that it wasn't a snore fest. And in fairness, I will apologise, because when Marcelo Bielsa's Leeds are involved, it rarely is a snore fest. Given the fact that Leeds have been under a bit of pressure, they've not been as bad as, Newcastle, but results haven't been really going their way. There seems to be a little bit of sluggishness about them in terms of getting the points that they need and getting the wins that they need. This was a massive result for them last night. It's not the first win of the season, obviously, but at a time when maybe Bielsa's feeling a bit of pressure that he hasn't felt before, this is three huge points against Palace.
Yes, it was a very, very big result, much needed, as you say. I don't think that there's the same pressure on Bielsa as maybe some other teams that would have found themselves in a similar position. You know, you go four matches without a win, and yeah, the pressure obviously ramps up. But, you know, with Bielsa, because of what he's done and who he is kind of, unless you're an idiot, the fans are not going to get on his back. You know, we're not going to have a big revolt and people throwing stuff from the stands at Bielsa. That will never, ever happen. It just can't and won't be allowed to happen, I don't think, by the majority of fans. So he's earned his, you know, his place, and people trust that he knows what he's doing. And now you've got to take into account here as well that Leeds have had so many problems with injuries. I don't think Leeds have put out a full-strength side, if ever, in the Premier League, first-choice side that you would say. Still waiting on Bamford to come back. Apparently he could be back this weekend, if not for the next match. So that has been a big miss, because Patrick Bamford contributes so much to Leeds' play beyond just the goals. And he was the top scorer for Leeds, one of the top scorers in the Premier League, in fact, in terms of English players last season. And so for him to be out for so long, you know, losing your best striker, that would affect any team. As I say, it's not just the goals. He contributes to the play, the build-up play, the hold-up play and all that. So he's a key part of the Leeds system, and one of the reasons that intensity perhaps hasn't been there. They've been missing Luke Ayling. They've had other injuries in defence as well. So, you know, it's just been one thing after another. And finally, it seems like Leeds' full-strength side is starting to get back in the game again. And, if you watch the highlights, it probably does look a bit of a snore fest, but it had its moments. Benteke had a huge chance that he put in the side netting. He probably took that shot another 10 times. Times he'd smash it home every time, but he didn't. Meslier, the Leeds keeper, made a fantastic save where I think, again, 99% of goalkeepers would let it go.
Real stretch through, Armstrong one.
Yeah, through his arms, managed to get his fingertips on it just to stop it going over the line. Hey, it might have gone in another day, but it didn't. And then, of course, it comes down to that penalty where it was an arm raised, ball hits player's arm. Straight, it's no argument about it. It's a penalty. VAR came to Leeds' aid with that, but then Rafinha with absolute nudges of steel to in the 93rd minute in front of the cop, do a run up with a little skip before it. Pause. You can actually hear on the highlights that the whole stadium just goes dead for a millisecond. Absolute silence, and then this huge roar as he smashed it home. I mean, what a way to finish it off. If you're a neutral, probably not the most interesting game, but as it has been, I think, for Leeds United fans, not just this season, but for many seasons, and certainly in the Bielsa era, another 90 minutes of potentially heart attack inducing stuff. You never know. Leeds could be 3-0 up with 5 minutes left, and you're still thinking they could lose this 4-3. You know, it's just, that's how it is. But as you say, massive result, really does ease the pressure, especially when you consider the games coming up. I mean, the game this coming weekend is against Brentford, which Leeds have to see as a winnable one at home, because the fixtures coming up for the rest of December are an absolute nightmare. It's Chelsea, then Man City, then Arsenal, then Liverpool. So, you know, you've got to cross your fingers till you get to the 28th of December when you've got Steven Gerrard's Aston Villa. It's not a set of fixtures in December that you would hope to get much from. And I'm sure that Leeds aren't hoping to get much from. I think with those fixtures, if you get anything from it, it's a bonus, isn't it? But they did all right against those teams last year, though. That's the weird thing. So who knows?
Who knows, indeed. And I think similarly to Newcastle, it's going to be a tough December for a lot of teams, particularly in the bottom half. Guys, we're going to take a quick break on the Football Social Daily. After the break, we're clicking into preview mode. 6 games in Wednesday night's Premier League action. And we're going to be starting with Southampton against Leicester, Watford against Chelsea, and David Moyes' West Ham playing host to Brighton. We'll be back in just a second.
Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode. Football Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk.
Hello and welcome back to Wednesday's edition of the Football Social Daily. Just a quick reminder, we are your daily Premier League podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts. Every 24 hours, we have a brand new, fresh Premier League podcast. So if you click subscribe on this one, you can get access to that brand new episode every single day. Right, before the break, we were looking at reviews and looking at last night's action. We're now moving ahead to Wednesday's games. 6 matches tonight, and we've broken them into 2 parts, 3 in part 2 and 3 in part 3. So let's get started. Marley, I'm going to go to you first. Southampton against Leicester. This is an important game probably for both sides in terms of maintaining form for Leicester and maybe looking to turn things around a little bit for Southampton. But I want to focus on Leicester because from battling for the Champions League for the last 2 seasons to kind of looking a little bit flat so far in 21-22, because there's obviously been speculation about Brendan Rodgers. Would he leave? Would he break his contract? Talk of him going to Manchester United. And that's affected results. They've also had a bit of a hangover from playing Thursday nights in the Europa League and then Sundays in the Premier League. But big win at the weekend, 4-2 against Claudio Ranieri, which would have hurt a little bit for a lot of Leicester fans, but they need points on the board, and that's exactly what they got. Jamie Vardy with 2 goals, Johnny Evans back in the team. Brendan Rodgers is obviously now not going to Manchester United, certainly not in the short term. Can Leicester put all of that behind them now? Because they do, like everyone else, have a pretty big and important run between now and Christmas. We know they've got the firepower and the talent and the experience in that team, but they need to put all of the off-field stuff to one side and concentrate on challenging to get into Europe again this season.
I think they have. When you say, you know, have they put this behind them, I think Man United appointing Rangnick can be finally give Leicester that sort of, right, he's not going anywhere, let's crack on now and let's have this. If it ever was a bit of a distraction, then it's over now and you know he's not going anywhere, so everyone can get their heads back down and crack on. I think it's hard to be consistent when you doing what Leicester are doing. You know, they came 5th the last couple of years. It's hard to go again, but they've got a good enough squad and a good enough manager to do it. It's just, it's been a little bit slow in the last sort of 5, 6, 7 games, but not to the point where your season's in ruins. You know, there's still plenty to play for. Still, the top 6 is very, very much achievable. Depending on what happens with, I mean, the top 3 look like they're going to run away from everyone else, but that still leaves one spot to fight for in 4th. We don't know who's going to get that. Leicester are in that mix with Spurs, with Man United, with Arsenal, and possibly with West Ham as well. So there's plenty there, and it starts tonight against Southampton down on the south coast, because neither team are in great form. I think they've both only won 1 of the last 5. I think Southampton may even go a little bit further than that, but 1 win in the last 5 games is not great for either side. But you know, Leicester have a decent record down there. We don't need to mention the 9-0 defeat 2 years ago that they stuck on Southampton. So I think they've got players coming into form as well. Madison's chipped in with a couple of goals at the weekend. And there's plenty in that Leicester side to say they're going to get back to the level where they know they can be, and hopefully go one step further than they did last year and the season before, and try and nick that 4th spot, because it's nowhere near over yet at all.
And looking at Southampton, Ian, in terms of their form, as Miley said, they're in a similar situation to Leicester, not in the greatest run of form. But one thing that they can kind of hang their hat on so far this season has been their home form. They've only lost once at home. That was to Watford at the end of October. And going into this game, they beat Villa at home. They drew with Burnley. They beat Leeds. They drew with West Ham. And they drew with United right back at the start of the season. When you're in a position like Southampton where it's not going brilliantly, they're not, you know, in the bottom three, but they're not really lighting things up, you want to hang yourself onto anything. And yeah, Marley's pointed that 9-0 drubbing that probably still lingers in the memory for Haaland and his players. But their home form is something to build on. And when you've not got a lot, that can be really important.
Well, yeah, but I mean, if we were saying before, if there's pressure on Leeds and there's pressure on Everton, well, why isn't there pressure on Southampton? Because they're down there in the same boat, very much. As you say, they do have this home form and they've been going quite well there. But the thing with Southampton over the years, and I don't know why it is, and I think we talked about Southampton a while ago in one of the episodes, if you want to delve through the hundreds of them that there is, try and find it, good luck. But we did sort of talk about why have they never really nailed it? You know, they've got good support in the area. They've got a nice stadium. They've had owners that have been willing to invest over the time, not necessarily consistently and not necessarily the same owners all the time. But they always seem to find themselves in this kind of no man's land between being outside of the, you know, firmly the European places, and sometimes they have, you know, snuck in there one way or another. But they've never really challenged, have they? And you'd think that for a team that spent so long in the Premier League, that by now they'd be looking with a bit more ambition to have a more secure life in the Premier League and you know, be top half regulars or aiming for the top six. But they always seem to, and it does come down to this inconsistency. And I don't know what it is. Obviously, different people, different owners, different players, different managers. But it just seems to be a thing with Southampton that they can't seem to get on this run. But as you say, the home form is important. I remember seeing that thrashing they had against Leicester. I was in the pub in Newcastle, no doubt, no less. I remember it firmly on the big screen. And yeah, not a great night. They'll be looking to avoid that, but I mean, to be honest, they do need some points, though, on the board. Hopefully, though, as Leeds are currently above them, Leicester do win, for me, selfishly. And probably, I guess, for Newcastle, Marley would probably be all behind that
as
well.
I'll take that as well,
exactly,
probably.
Exactly.
I'll have a bit of that. Keep them down there with us.
That's right.
Before we move on to Watford-Chelsea, I'm going to grab a prediction off you on this one. Leicester, 10 points from 5. Southampton, 8 points from 5. Marley, down on the south coast, how's this one going to go?
I see Leicester winning it, and I was looking on the odds, and Leicester are 2-1 to win this game, so that is that's potential profit there. However, now I've said that, they'll probably lose, even though I'm going to stick 10 quid on it.
sensible advice to turn a bit of a profit, Ian.
Yeah, I think Leicester have got enough. Jamie Vardy seems to have found a bit of form at the moment, and I think it'll be a close game. Just a goal in it. I don't know exactly how many the goals will be, but I think, you know, it'd be 1-0, 2-1, something like that to Leicester.
Okay, fair enough. Right, moving on. Watford against Chelsea. Ian, we'll start with you on this one. Thomas Tuchel was very annoyed at the weekend. 1-1 draw against Manchester United, following on from a 1-1 draw against Burnley 2 weeks beforehand. And he's frustrated by the fact that they're still allowing teams in late on in the game and they're not wrapping it up, getting that second goal and getting the 3 points in the bag. And Mark Critchley, who was on with us on Sunday, said something very interesting, which is you look at the top three of Manchester City, Liverpool and Chelsea, obviously not in that order as it stands. Manchester City and Liverpool can blow you away in different ways. They can absolutely blow you out of the water and win 4-5-0. Chelsea don't necessarily do that unless they're playing Norwich. Chelsea's thing is consistency. They'll grind you down and eventually get those 3 points. But if Chelsea don't have that level of consistency or a reduced level of consistency, they start to kind of wobble a little bit because they can't do what Liverpool and City do. I'm not saying hit the panic button for Chelsea. They're still top of the league. But they do seem to maybe not able to grind those results out that they were doing a month or 2 months ago.
Yeah, Chelsea's big strength is their defence, isn't it? And that's the big thing that's changed since Thomas Tuchel came in. And I think last week when we were talking about the Champions League, on how they've let in the fewest goals, pretty much, of all the teams in Europe. So they do have, if not one of Europe's best defences. But as you say, it's the goals up front that are not sort of flowing quite so freely. Incidentally, there's an article today in The Athletic, which is quite interesting, and it's about goal scorers in general and the fact that we're a third of the way into the Premier League campaign, and there's only a couple of players who have scored more than five goals after this point in the season. And that's the lowest, I think, in Premier League history. So goals either are being spread around the team or the traditional striker is having a tough time this season. And not just for Chelsea, but I think all of the top teams, Man United, Man City, Spurs, Chelsea, Arsenal, none of the players that have scored over five goals play for them. They'll play for other teams further down. Incidentally, Watford being one of them. So from that, it has to be a bit of a concern that Watford are actually, I know that they're letting goals in, but they're actually scoring among the most amount of goals in the Premier League at the moment, or have done up to this point in the season. So it's going to be an interesting matchup. You know, one of the sort of best attacking lines, and I know that it sounds funny saying that with Watford, you don't associate with that, but statistically, that's where they're at, against one of the best defences in the match tonight. So could be tricky. I wouldn't say that Chelsea are hitting a bad patch. I mean, if that's a bad patch, I'd take it. I'm sure Marley would as well.
Absolutely.
But Marley, I just wanted to ask you about Watford, and I do agree with Ian in this sense of that they are scoring goals, and that will give them a fighting chance in terms of getting themselves out of relegation. But you look at the situation since Claudio Ranieri's come in, obviously he's a really well-liked coach, and he seems to have got the players kind of rowing for him and pushing in the right direction. But they're not really good enough to outscore teams across the course of a season. You look at the positive results they've got, 5-2 against Everton and then 4-1 against Manchester United. They are big results, they're big wins. I'm not being a killjoy, but the reality is those types of results happen once in a blue moon. They don't happen over the course of a season to be enough to get out of a relegation zone. 1-0 defeat to Southampton, 1-0 defeat to Arsenal, and then losing to Leicester last weekend. They're more worrying because Ranieri would probably throw away a 4-1 win to have two or three back-to-back 1-1 draws or 1-0 wins. It is exciting that they are scoring these goals and they do have a really good attacking line, but ultimately, to be a little bit old school about it, those results are not what's going to keep them up if they want to stay in the Premier League.
Yeah, on what you say, it does sound a little bit harsh what you're saying, but there is truth in it. And you know, if what fans are listening, there probably is a bit of truth in that when you look at it sort of from a non Watford perspective. So, you know, the big wins they've had as well, they're scoring late in those games. You remember Everton was 2-1 after 85 minutes and they won, was it 5-2 they beat Everton, sorry? So it was like 2-1.
5-2, yeah.
Going into the last 10 minutes, they got a couple of late goals. And the Man United game was the same. You know, it was 2-1 and they scored twice in injury time to make it 4-1 and get Solskjaer the sack. So there does need to be more consistency with the results, because they are losing games against teams around them, and they need to start getting that consistency, because it's much easier to have that than to go, you know, oh, we're going to lose to, I don't know, like Villa or Everton or something, and then turn up and absolutely hammer them. Like it's almost harder to predict what you're going to do. So Watford have still got a good chance, though. They've got a good chance of staying up. The strikers are scoring. And that's the main thing when you're down there. If you're on the verge of the relegation zone, you need something. You need either a good defence who doesn't concede many, or you need a striker or a couple of strikers that are going to chip in with a few goals. And they seem to have the latter of those two. So they're still not by no means in trouble, but they do need a bit more consistency, and that will ultimately see them pull away to sort of 13th, 14th, rather than get sucked into that battle with Leeds and Newcastle and Watford and Norwich, sorry. So, yeah.
Give us a call on this one, Ian. Watford, goal-hungry Watford against, quote, struggling Chelsea. How do you see this going down?
I really don't know. I'm gonna say it's a score draw. 2-2. Bit of a thriller for the neutral.
Ooh, very conservative, very sensible. Okay, Marley, would you agree? Another draw for Chelsea, which would make it 3-4 in the Premier League.
No, I think they'll be all right tonight. I think they'll win comfortably, 3-0. Let's go 3-0.
Okay, fair enough. Right, we're going to move on to the other game from Wednesday night, which is going to wrap up part two before we check out the other three games in part three. West Ham against Brighton. And there's two interesting subplots here that involve the two managers, Marley. David Moyes, if he wins tonight, he becomes the third highest Premier League manager in terms of wins, in pretty esteemed company, just behind Sir Alex Ferguson and Arsene Wenger. And then you have Graham Potter, who, a little bit like Tuchel, was annoyed in his post-match press conference at the weekend because the Brighton fans were booing his players for what they thought was a subpar performance against the mighty Leeds United. So, talk about Moyes first. Obviously, this record that he's going for would probably put him in, as I say, strong company, but he's not in the same bracket as them. He's been rewarded for just chipping away and chipping away and gathering wins over a long career spread across quite a few clubs. But their form has dipped off a little bit. This Champions League chat from a couple of months ago has maybe taken a bit of a dive with some negative results in recent weeks. We know that he doesn't change a lot. Generally speaking, if there's not an injury, he doesn't rotate his starting 11. But how does he reignite them moving into a busy Christmas period? He'll want to, you know, manage the pressure of West Ham are going to be in the Champions League, but also he knows that they probably deserve to be definitely in the conversation of the Europa League. How does he get them back on track without upsetting that balance of expectation within the squad?
I don't know, mate. if I knew that, I'd be a football coach. But, you know, I think West Ham have found a bit of consistency. I think we've said earlier in the season on a few podcasts now that they win when you expect them to win these days, which has never been West Ham in the past decade. You can ask Jim about that one for sure. But they are, yes, they're going through a little bit of a sort of slow patch, but they've got enough quality there to sort it out and get back to where they were. They've coped with two games a week all season now, so this week should benefit them more, I would think, because they used to play in Saturday, Thursday or Sunday, Thursday or whatever it might be. So Saturday, Wednesday this week isn't such a challenge for them, I don't think. So I think that could be something that helps them in this game tonight. So, you know, Brighton haven't won in 9 either. So, you know, if you're out of form, what you want to play is a team that's even worse out of form. And even though I think Brighton fans were absolutely way off when they had the audacity to boo a manager that's had them 9th in the table, West Ham are, you know, favourites for this one and probably rightly so.
Ian, Marley's done his bird call and calling out the Seagulls for this thing with Graham Potter, and Potter was really annoyed in his post-match at the weekend. Obviously, the point against Leeds, he kind of said it was a positive, they played well. Maybe unfortunate not to get all 3 points, but the fans were booing them. They were booing them at half time and they booed them off at the end. And Brighton were unlucky. I know they hit the post 2 or 3 times, but in reality, in terms of expectations for where Brighton want to be, Graham Potter's doing a very, very good job.
Yeah, I mean, he's a fairly solid manager and I don't think he's going to get them into any trouble. It was a scrappy game and both sides made it hard for each other, the Leeds and Brighton match. You know, but Brighton are doing all right. You know, they're 9th. They're on the same amount of points as Man United at this stage in the season. I think if you took that and if you said at the start of the season you're going to be a point behind Spurs and on the same points as Man United and above Leicester, you'd probably be fairly happy with that. And that's exactly where they're at, isn't it? So, you know, there's certainly worse offerings in the Premier League at the minute. I don't think getting rid of Graham Potter is going to somehow turn Brighton into Real Madrid. Just not going to happen, is it? You know, I think they're doing okay.
Ian, where did those boos come from, honestly?
It was nothing to do with me. I don't know.
So, I mean...
No, we're not accusing
I put it on Twitter yesterday, man.
No.
Yeah, not in Brighton anyway. It's far too long a drive.
Yeah, it's... I don't know, man. I mean, yes, they've won no games in... Well, sorry, they haven't won in the last 9, but... You've got to have a sense of perspective if you're Brighton fan. You're 9th in the bloody Premier League, for God's sake. You finished 15th, 15th, 16th and 17th in the last 4 years since you come out of the Championship for the first time pretty much ever. You know, you're 9th. You've got one of the best managers in the league.
Yeah. Look, this is what happens, I think, in the Premier League, right? So once you get in the Premier League, you get this whole new audience and people who never have seen football before. suddenly start to follow their local team. And because if you live on the South Coast, then Brighton's the only Premier League team, they're probably going to go there on that part of the world anyway. So you get a new generation of fans who suddenly become experts. You've also got younger kids, I suppose, who maybe were slightly too young to know what football was when Brighton first got promoted, and assume that they should be doing as well as all the other teams in the Premier League without any sense of perspective whatsoever, and they go on Twitter and Facebook and start mouthing off, and now they've got a few years older. I think that can happen. But you've got to look at the resources that Brighton have got, and the scale of the operation between these clubs at the top, Man City and Liverpool and Man United, and not just financial, but they've got, the best people in the background running these clubs as well. It makes a big, big difference. And, you can't just expect to suddenly, with the resources that Brighton have got, the area they've got, the catchment for their fan base and stuff, they're competing in a different level because they don't have the same resources, and they never will have, unfortunately. It's just how it is. And to be in the top half is great. And they've got a chance of getting, as I say, you're on level on points from Man United. So if Man United can still get into Europe, why can't Brighton? So you can still achieve these things. And getting rid of Graham Potter is not going to make it any better, I can assure you, because, waiting in the wings with his moustache and his shades is Samuel Aladicio. the top manager in continental Europe at the moment is out of a job.
Oh God!
Or I can't think of a man more out of place than Sam Allardyce in Brighton.
Well, I've seen him dancing.
No. That just sent a shiver right through me. Just thinking about him.
Yeah, it could well happen.
He's I always think he's like the Christmas candy man. Around Christmas, if you mention his name, he will appear and get a short-term Premier League job. So let's all be really, really careful and not say his name too loudly. Right, before we take a break, call this one for us, Marley. West Ham, back-to-back defeats. Brighton, I think it's 6 draws from their last 7 or 7 draws from their last 8. But, apparently they want to go on and win the Premier League. So how do you see this one going down? Bronze medal for Moyes or title chase in Brighton getting 3 points?
I'm going 3-2 to West Ham. I think we're going to see a goal fest.
I'm going for a scrappy affair, Fergal. I think it'll be 1-0 to West Ham.
Ooh, controversial call. The Brighton fans will not be happy with you, Ian, and they definitely won't be happy with that one.
I'll
they will
just
be booing
to live with that.
At the London Stadium tonight. Right, we're going to take a quick break, but don't worry, we'll be back in a second. 3 more Premier League games to get through in Wednesday night's action. Wolves against Burnley, the return of Grealish as Aston Villa host Manchester City, and then to wrap up, the small matter of the Merseyside derby. We'll be back in just a second.
Football's Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk. Football's Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode.
Hello and welcome back to Wednesday's edition of the Football Social Daily. And we're wrapping up with 3 more games in Wednesday night action. Ian, Wolves at home to Burnley tonight. Sean Dyche's game against Spurs was called off because of the snow this weekend. And the only real kind of news from Dyche building into this, because Burnley have not been in dreadful form, they just seem to be drawing a lot of games without dropping into any sort of real danger, was him questioning the position of journalism in 2021. Obviously, there was a big story about him going out in the snow at Turf Moor in a shirt and not really bothering him. And he did one of those brilliant press conferences that gets clipped up for social media where he called out the journalist and basically said, is this it? Is this where we are in 2021 with journalism, asking people about standing in the snow? And yourself, as a journalist, are you worried by Dyche's comments that's the direction that sports journalism is going?
No, I just think it was the only thing that you could take from that particular game, because nothing else happened other than Sean Dyche standing there in his shirt. I'm disappointed he wasn't in short sleeves. Back to you.
Yeah, I agree. I think maybe Dyche is going soft. I wouldn't quite say in his old age. I definitely wouldn't say in his old age, in case he hears and comes round, because he's quite a scary individual. Marley, as we say, Burnley, without really being in any major sort of problems, they are drawing a lot of games. If they could get a win tonight, that would be very Dyche to just kind of ease things a little bit going into Christmas. But Bruno Lage and Wolves are deceptively doing really, really well. Just looking at their latest run of form, based on the last 9 games, they've won 6, they've drawn 2. They've only lost against Palace, stretching all the way back to the middle of September. And there was so much talk when Nuno Santo left, would that destabilise the club? He was so important to them. Obviously got back-to-back Europa finishes, but then dropped off last season, and then he went off to Spurs, and he's now, I don't know where he's working now. But Bruno Lage is doing a really good job. He's got Raúl Jiménez back in the team, back scoring goals, and things are clicking for them. And we talk about all these teams in the conversation for Europe. Wolves are in that based on this form.
Yeah, he is. He's found what he needs at Wolves. I think they've found themselves a little bit. I think they struggled at first, but ultimately they've come good. And I think they needed the fresh start after Nuno. It got a bit stale, a bit boring. I think they needed fresh impetus. Bruno Lage has done that. He's got a few key players back. Pedence coming back. Neto's on his way back soon as well, so that'll improve them even more. I think they'll fall away from the European places towards the sort of turn of the year, that January, February time. But I still think they're good enough to beat Burnley tonight. And Burnley don't travel too well. They don't play football too well right now, unless Corne scores another worldie. But I think Wolves will be all right, and they'll get the win tonight, I reckon.
Give us a call. So you're going for a win for Wolves. Ian, Wolves, Burnley, how do you see this going?
Well, I mean, you say that they've had a good run, but looking at Wolves' fixtures, I'm actually quite surprised that they haven't faced a top six side, or certainly a top four side, you would say, since the 29th of August. And they've got them all coming up now. So they've had, you know, yes, they've had a good run, but they have had a good run, if you know what I mean. And playing against Burnley tonight signals their final sort of easy game, really, yeah, of the year, because they've got Liverpool, Man City, Chelsea, Arsenal, Man United all waiting in the wings over the next few weeks or so. So they need to make the best of this. I think they'll probably just shade it maybe against Burnley 2-1.
OK, fair enough. Right, moving on. Aston Villa at home to Manchester City. The return of Jack Grealish Marley to Villa Park. And he did an interview this week with The Telegraph, and Pep Guardiola did an interview with The Guardian based on his arrival at Manchester City, how he settled in, the whole £100 million tag weighing on his shoulders. And Grealish was quite honest. He said it has been difficult in terms of adapting, maybe a little bit harder than he expected. And he's quite an honest person whenever he gets asked a question by a journalist. Pep Guardiola kind of gave a little bit more of a confusing answer when he asked about what he thought of Grealish's form, and he said it'll be a problem if we don't start to see his very best form. We want to see it now. We've got 6 or 7 months left in the season with lots of nice things to come, hopefully, but we want to see his best this season. I would say that he's settled in perfectly, but it'd be a problem if we don't see his best. And just looking at some of Grealish's numbers, Premier League and Champions League together, 13 games, 2 goals and 2 assists. It's not lighting the world on fire. And Guardiola's comments are a little bit strange, and Guardiola is a fan of a strange quote to the media. What have you made of Grealish's settling at Manchester City?
I think he's been all right. He's not been amazing, but that tends to happen when you're not the main man in the team. I think a lot of the form of Bernardo Silva is down to the fact that everybody's talking about Grealish and, you know, what's this guy going to do? And it takes the pressure off Bernardo Silva, and he can play like he's been playing this season. I think when you start focusing on one guy, it sort of has a positive effect on others, because they think, well, they're all talking about him, what about me? And I think that's what Bernardo's been doing this season. So I think when you start to forget about Grealish, that's when he can really, really hurt you. Because, you know, if you focus on him and think, oh, he's out of form, he's not gonna do too much. He's the type of player that's good enough, obviously, to really, really hurt you. So I think going on into the season, as we get towards the business end of it, the Champions League and the sort of title race in sort of February time, I think he'll come good. As in, like, he'll get to his top form, and he'll be a real, real threat for City. And I think they'll have more than enough to see off Villa tonight, because I just can't back anyone against Man City when they're playing like they are right now.
You're obviously going for a win for City, but Ian, I just want to quickly ask you about Steven Gerrard. Back-to-back wins since he's come in, 2-0 over Brighton and then 2-0 at Palace last weekend, but he's now facing his first test as Villa boss. City tonight, Leicester at the weekend, and then Liverpool away the following weekend. He's made a really good start, and he's put his stamp on the players so far. What have you made of him in terms of what he might change about Aston Villa in terms of their objectives for the season. With Dean Smith, it was about survival. Does Gerrard raise the bar a little bit, or is it probably a bit too soon?
I think it's probably a bit too soon to change that kind of mission. I think the number one aim for any team surely has to be survival, because there's no point having your sights set further up the table if you're still floundering around at the bottom. And they're all right at the minute, but again, they're still in that group with so many teams in that, as I say, let's say 10th downwards, or even more than that. Maybe the top six are the only ones who can really kind of maybe sort of relax slightly at this stage in the season, because it is very tight down there. You're talking about Man United having 18 points, and then Norwich, who are in the top relegation spot in 18th, are on 10. So you've got 8 points separating a relegation spot and or being on the fringes of European qualification. So all very, very tight yet. Number one, get that 40 points on the board, isn't it? That's what you really need to do, or whatever it is these days. It usually always be about 40. It's a good aim to have, and they're nearly halfway there. But as you say, now he's had a couple of matches to ease himself in as Steven Gerrard, but the big tests start to come now. It'll be interesting to see how he goes, and I think until we see how his sides fare against some tougher examination in the form of City and Liverpool and so on, we'll get a better idea probably, come after Christmas as to where they're maybe heading. But they need to get through this period now, and yeah, survival surely is the first aim.
Yeah, I agree. Right, final game of Wednesday night, the Merseyside derby, Everton against Liverpool. Marley, looking at previous records in terms of Everton, they have been very, very solid at home against Liverpool. Last four games have been draws, three of them not the most exciting, they've been 0-0. Last season they went to Anfield and broke that long, I think it was 21 or 22 years that they'd not won at Anfield. But based on their form in recent weeks, it doesn't look as if it's going to go in that direction tonight. 2 points from their last seven Premier League games. And we talked about it on Sunday as well, and I've been chatting to a few friends and colleagues who are Everton fans, and they said that the away end at Brentford last week was just toxic towards the players, towards Rafa Benitez. Under David Moyes, and even all the way through, even under Sam Allardyce, Liverpool going to Everton, you knew that it would be really hostile for Liverpool. They'd make it really difficult, and they'd scrap and maybe get a point. That doesn't look to be the case tonight. Everton are absolutely decimated by injury, and their confidence is through the floor.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you mentioned the last four have been draws at Goodison Park, but the last time Everton won at Merseyside derby at Goodison Park was October 2010, when Tim Cahill and Mikel Arteta scored the goals. So you're talking about how dominant Liverpool have been, and it's backed up in the stats. I mean, unbeaten for your biggest rivals for 10 years is absolutely massive. And in those 10 years, you could argue that Everton have never been in worse sort of form than this one tonight. So, the pressure's huge on Rafa Benitez at the minute. I think some fans have started turning on him. Very short memories, because I think Rafa has only had his full strength squad right at the start of the season, and they won the first three games and they were top of the league after three games. Then his two most important players get injured, then Doucouré as well, which is a big loss, and they end up slipping down the table. I don't think that's a coincidence. I think that's more of a reason. And they need to sort of back him in January with a bit of money that the previous manager's got there, and we can see what he does with it. So, but going into tonight, I mean, it's a huge ask for Everton. But if you're ever going to turn it around and turn the tide, beating your rivals at home for the first time in 11 years is the perfect antidote to what Everton have been going through for the last 7 or 8 weeks.
It just looks difficult to call in terms of a positive result for Everton. What are you going for, Marley, on this one? Give us a prediction.
I said it was the antidote. I think it's bloody hard to do, though. So I think Liverpool will ease this. I'd say 3 or 4-1.
Okay, Ian, obviously we mentioned Everton's record at Goodison in the derby, but based on the here and the now, Liverpool go into this on the back of 2-4-0 wins at Anfield against Arsenal and Southampton. How do you see this going?
Yeah, I saw an interview with Rafa on the telly last night, and bless him, he looks a bit stressed. And sort of has a has an air of a guy who's still trying to convince himself that this is a good idea to take this Everton job. And I suspect that if he could have his time again, he'd probably be saying he was busy or doing something else, or even just going to Newcastle for a day or something to remember the great times. Yeah. But I think
I'm waiting for the Newcastle job. Because he missed it by about 6 weeks, didn't he, the poor sod?
I know. I wish I'd have just hung out for that. Damn. Anyway, I think it's going to be a tough ask. Everton are not firing on all cylinders, seem a bit disjointed at the moment. Liverpool, however, are firing on all cylinders. It's going to be an exciting game. It's always a good one. The derby, blood and thunder and all that. It's going to be an exciting watch. Can't see anybody other than Liverpool getting the win. But it's always a great occasion, the Merseyside derby. And you'll notice in the stands as well that there's a mix of fans. You know, it's one of the few games where you'll get some Liverpool fans sat with Everton fans. They do actually do that, and they get on. It's a nice thing. It's a nice thing, nice occasion. And it'll be good to watch for the neutral, which I am a bit. Although I used to support Liverpool when I was about 8, so...
Oh, big reveal that. Wow. Okay, right. A bit of a shock reveal from Ian at the end of today's podcast. Yeah, I'm going to go 3 for 3. I'm going to go for Liverpool, and unfortunately, more misery for Rafa. Right, guys, we're going to call it there for today's edition of the Football Social Daily. Ian, Marley, thanks so much for your time.
Hiya.
Cheers, guys.
Great stuff indeed. And as always with Football Social Daily, we are here every single day with a brand new Premier League podcast available wherever you get your podcasts. If you click subscribe on this episode, you can get access to that brand new show as soon as it is ready. Have a great Wednesday, and we'll speak to you again very, very soon.
Football Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk.